Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of My Perfect Console, a correspondence episode, in fact. So I've had a deluge of emails and comments in recent weeks. The second year of My Perfect Console, and some of those are just, you know, nice encouraging messages. Some of them are suggestions for guests, but there have been some questions and some feedback that I think it warrants getting into a little bit. So I thought I'd put out just a special episode reading out some of the questions, some of the comments that you've made. In particular, had a recent episode with Jack Thompson, who is an American. He claims he's a bipartisan actor, but I think it's fair to say he's more on the conservative political right side of the spectrum in terms of his morals and the way that he has acted in the past, a big critic of the video game industry. That episode, as you might imagine, generated quite a lot of discussion, and I think people appreciated the chance to hear from someone who perhaps they just knew maybe from tabloid headlines in the early to mid 2000s, and having him on My Perfect Console, particularly after a period of being away, was a chance to for him to reflect on some of that work and for me to probe into some of those views a little bit. It was, I had reservations absolutely about inviting him on to the podcast, and certainly some listeners were not happy about the choice to invite him on. But then, of course, there were many of you that I think also did appreciate hearing from him. An email here from RJ Walsh, for example. Love the podcast. Listen to everyone so far and a few of them repeatedly. I've just finished the Jack Thompson episode. Even though he had my stomach turning, you guys ended with a laugh. He was so irritating at certain points, I had to pause the episode several times and swear quite loudly. But it was nice to hear a more calm and somewhat more nuanced Jack, even though he still makes me feel sick. He then goes on to say, RJ, next episode, could you maybe have whomever the current leader of the Taliban is on the pod to discuss his favourite Bible adventure? Games. Surely that would be Quran adventure games, but I suppose the Bible and the Quran do share quite a few stories. So, yes, anyway, thank you, RJ. I'm not going to pick out just the positive ones. There was more robust feedback. So here, an email from Chris Lewis. I listened to your Jack Thompson episode and wanted to write in with a few thoughts. I was surprised when I saw his name. It was an intriguing listener. I'm glad it was an engaged discussion rather than just letting him say his piece. Like you, I was a bit unarmed by how chill he was. When he talked about the restriction of selling mature rated games to minors, he compared that to selling things like alcohol. I think it's a good counter argument to point out that one of these things is a law and one of them is simply an industry rule. Although created surely to avoid regulation from government. I'm guessing he's saying here that the law is not being allowed to sell alcohol to underage people, and whereas selling mature rated games to minors is an industry rule instead. He also never mentioned a parent or guardian's role in policing the content of their child. Also requiring proof of legal age to purchase a mature game online would have a chilling effect on adult purchases, restricting the freedom of adults for the supposed safety of children. You may be aware of the work of conservative state governments in the US to force pornography sites to ID users. I believe such legislation was recently passed in the UK. Yes, it was. This will almost certainly only push users to VPNs or illegal sites and make the industry more unsafe. And a similar move in games would surely only serve to raise game piracy. Chris, thank you for your points there that are well made. A message here from Alex. I just listened to the Thompson podcast and I appreciated the frank conversation. Your questions and probing around a tonal disparity between the public figure, I also remember the more vitriol and tabloid tactics being front and centre, and the man sort of affably sitting in front of you having a chat, was appreciated. I'm surprised he didn't give more ground or credence to the idea of tactics like his being a sort of carnival mirror, blowing things up bigger than his views on games would suggest now. Were it simply a case that he wanted to draw attention to an issue and ended up overstating it, then it would have been nice to hear him admit to it now. At least he said he was addicted to the limelight or the public platform, a kind of admission. Corey sent in a very thoughtful email as well about this. We did have a good back and forth, and I have actually taken a bit of action on Corey's points here. But first, let me read out what he wrote. My qualm with the Jack Thompson episode, it was overall very good, but my qualm with it is the lack of contextual fact-checking at the end, similar to how you did with Nolan Bushnell of Atari. Yes, Corey's referring to a special episode I had with Nolan Bushnell at the tail end of 2023. And Nolan was a great raconteur, but said a few things that perhaps stretched the truth, or at least that other people dispute. So I did try and clear those things up at the end. Back to Corey. He says, with Jack Thompson, he plays into many tried and true tropes of the American right wing and historical satanic panics that keep repeating in the United States. Oftentimes these are layered with half-truths and straw-man appeals to conservative moral emotions that don't hold up to factual scrutiny. I understand this does not work within the actual interview to fact-check him live, but I'm surprised to have nothing at the end to clarify some of the claims he made while talking to you. I'm disappointed that there doesn't seem to be more journalistic rigour applied to you by you to his words and version of history, for example. Care to explain at the end why he was legally disbarred? So this is a reference to the fact that Jack Thompson was disbarred from practicing law in the state of Florida in 2009, if I recall. This is a pretty big deal, Corey says. Surely we can't take him at his word that it was a personal vendetta an executive with Rockstar had with him. It's a fanciful cartoon villain fantasy that he pushed forward. Yes, Corey's point is very well made, and I went back. If you listen to the episode in the first couple of days, you won't have caught this, but I did go back and add in some factual context, specifically around the judge's ruling that led to the disbarring of Thompson from practicing law. This was on 31 counts, and it included things like witness intimidation and lots of things that the court stated were, you know, highly unprofessional and unbecoming of a lawyer. So I read out that stuff from the actual court hearing at the end of that episode and inserted it in and sort of re-released it. So, you know, anyone coming to listen to Jack Thompson from you know, after a couple of days after that landed will get some of that context. But yes, Corey, I really, really appreciate you writing in and just frauding me on that. I did say to her, Corey, this is slightly probably my oversight. There is a symptom of the fact that My Perfect Console is a independent production that I at the moment sort of make pretty much entirely by myself. So if I'd have had a producer, I think that probably would have been caught in the same way that, you know, I work with very skilled editors at many publications and they catch things like that and go, you need to push back on that or qualify it. So that was just like a slight, you know, the fact that I don't have that safety net probably. So thank you for that. Yes, like I say, I'm independent at the moment. That might change at some point. But right now, you know, I appreciate that feedback and will watch out for that in future. I'm not planning on having any other big controversial figures on my Perfect Console. I think it's worth saying it is a celebratory show predominantly. But for those cases where these things come up, point taken and appreciated. Right, so let's come to some slightly lighter matters, I'm going to say. So I did invite some questions just from readers who I thought might like to ask some things. And yes, I've had some feedback as well from listeners who just wanted to add in a bit of their own context, some things here. So you may remember in March's episode with the crime novelist Val McDermid. If you've not listened to that, go and listen to Val. She's an extremely distinguished crime writer. A friend of mine who works at BBC Radio 4 told me that on a programme he was working on, they tried for 6 months to get her on. And when she finally agreed to do it, it was a massive victory. So I feel very honoured that she came on My Perfect Console so willingly. And I think that is not down to me or the show necessarily, but perhaps more the fact that she doesn't often get to talk about video games. And so that was quite appealing. But anyway, the point is you should go and listen to Val because she's someone who is worth listening to. One of her games that she picked was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was the video game adaptation of the novel by Douglas Adams, which of course was also a BBC adaptation. Something, in fact, I didn't mention in the show notes at the end of that is that the piece of music I played from that is from the BBC original dramatisation, because of course the game itself doesn't have any music. Anyway, Ian Greener wrote in, and I'm going to read his email in full because this is very interesting video game history stuff that I think will appeal if you are a listener of My Perfect Console. Hello, Simon, Ian writes. I've just listened to your wonderful podcast with Val McDermid. I thought I'd drop you a line. The connections you were making at the end of the podcast between Steve Moretzky and Douglas Adams were wonderful. It's great to visit that time. Steve Moretzky being one of the designers at Infocom who worked on some beloved text adventures that were before my time but have come up numerous times on the podcast. Back to Ian. However, there's another person who doesn't get mentioned in those conversations who I think is really interesting. The story goes like this. Infocom's biggest text adventure hit outside of the original Zork games was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was a collaboration between Steve Moretzky and Douglas. They, of course, wanted to make a follow-up, and Bureaucracy, which was also, this is me speaking in brackets now, this game was picked earlier in March by Patrick House, the American neuroscientist, by the way. Lots of links here. Anyway, Bureaucracy was meant to be that follow-up to Hitchhiker, but Douglas rather lost interest in the project. He was a little infamous for his approach to deadlines, and it became clearer and clearer that he wasn't going to get his contribution done. Faced with falling sales for other games and the need to make good on their promise to a follow-up, Infocom turned to a friend of Adams to do most of the work on the game, a chap called Michael Bywater. Michael Bywater is an interesting author in his own right, but it's fair to say that most accounts of Infocom at that time acknowledge him as the writer of Bureaucracy. It might have been Adams' idea, but Bywater did the hard work. If you look at Hitchhiker and Bureaucracy next to one another, the latter has a rather different tone. The story doesn't end there. There were a few contenders to be the British Infocom in the 1980s, of course, Infocom being an American company. One was a company called Magnetic Scrolls. They claimed to have a better parser than Infocom. So this is the software that you would write in, go north, pick up, book, and the computer would spit back a response, a bit like if you played with ChatGPT, it works exactly like that. They claimed to have a better parser than Infocom back before, whether you could get 120 frames per second or 60. That was surprisingly important. And they had pictures in their games too. Magnetic Scrolls were run by Anita Sinclair, an heiress who most of the British computer games industry appeared to be at least a little in love with. This is Simon popping in here. I can't verify that as a fact, of course. And I actually don't know how Ian knows all of this. Perhaps he was one of those individuals who was in love with Anita Sinclair, and this is just a big admission letter. But anyway, we'll take Ian's word for it for now. So we've got this character, Anita Sinclair, who everyone's in love with. But Anita was already in a relationship, dun-dun-dun, with Michael Bywater. It turns out that Bywater probably had a hand in several of the Magnetic Scrolls games, most clearly one called Jinxter, that's J-I-N-X-T-E-R. There are also rumours that he was authoring a more obvious follow-up to Hitchhiker with Infocom that never got completed. So Bywater is an important figure in 1980s text adventures, even though no one seems to remember him. There's a postscript. Ian, you are very thorough, loving this. He writes, when Adams himself got bored with writing Hitchhiker novels, he moved on to another series based on a holistic detective called Dirk Gently. Gently was all about seeing obscure connections and joining everything up, even if what results seems improbable. Dirk Gently was based on Adams' friend, Michael Bywater. Sorry, that turned out longer than I'd hoped, but I hope it makes you smile at least a little. I think the story is a lovely one. Yes, it sure is, buddy. Thank you so much, Ian. Really appreciate that. If you're listening to this, a little bit of bonus info for you. I have made contact with Steve Moretzky. He wrote Steve Moretzky's A Mind Forever Voyaging, which was picked by previous guests of the show, Sam Barlow and Josh Scher, who worked on Uncharted and The Last of Us, and Sam Barlow, who worked on all Telling Lies and Her Story, and most recently Immortality, as well as when he worked at Mainstream Studios, he worked on some of the Silent Hill games as well. Anyway, I've been in contact with Steve Moretzky, and Steve has agreed to come on the podcast. This is a bit of a win. I mean, as you can tell, Ian should probably be doing the interview because he knows a lot more about the ins and outs of this time than I do. But Steve seems like a very good chap. And, you know, from reading some of the things that he's written and the talks that he's given, he seems funny and kind and like a good writer as well. So I'm very, very much looking forward to recording with Steve, which will be a total honour. So look out for that later this year. We're not speaking for a few weeks, but it'll be coming out at some point around the summer, I expect. Well, that was great, wasn't it? So what else have we got? So lovely message here from Duncan Robson. It was the Game Developers Conference, as many of you may know, a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco. This is a sort of annual get together for the video game industry. Well, the people who make games, at least, and series of lectures and, you know, get-togethers and business deals and things are done like that. Duncan was there, one of our listeners, and he writes in, "Hi, Simon. At GDC this week, I met Frank Lance at a party and told him how much I enjoyed his episode of your podcast." Now, Frank, of course, was on the podcast last year. He is a professor at NYU who heads up the Game Center there and also a game designer in his own right. One of the designers behind Drop 7, a legendary, I'm going to use the word, puzzle game that came out for the iPhone and things, I don't know, probably 15 years ago now. But yes, anyway, Frank's the designer of that. Go and listen to the episode. It's a lot of fun. Back to Duncan's email. "This led to one of the best conversations about games I've ever had, which included him singing your praises, asking me for my 5 games, and providing some encouraging words about my projects. For every episode you do, there must be many unofficial episodes happening offline, and I thought you'd like to hear about this one." Thank you, Duncan. That is, what a lovely email. What a lovely thing to hear about. Thank you. Duncan, I went back and asked Duncan what he does in the games industry, and he told me that he makes game trailers. That's his sort of main work, and you can find out about that at his website, duncanrobson.com. And he also says, "A few years ago, I tried to make a video game version of Christian McCarley's The Clock. I wasn't able to generate enough interest to make the whole 24 hours, but the 2 hours I did is on YouTube. I'd like to return to it one day." He does provide a YouTube link, but I won't read that out because it's a string of numbers and letters. So if you're interested in that, head to Duncan's website and use some search terms. You'll be able to find it, I'm sure. Thank you, Duncan.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, let's come to some questions for me. I hope this isn't too indulgent, but I thought I'd take this opportunity to answer them. So, Kormakur Gardason, I hope I'm saying that right. That's got to be a Nordic name, maybe Swedish. Anyway, Kormakur asks, is there a particular dream guest of yours living or dead? I mean, yes, absolutely, of course. Jesus. I think, you know, from the video game industry, I would have loved to have interviewed Gunpei Yokoi. He was the Nintendo inventor, I think is probably the best name for him, but they probably called him an engineer. He designed the original Game Boy. He also worked on Nintendo toys before they even made video games. Of course, if you know your video game history, Nintendo was a Hanafuda card manufacturer that started in the 1800s and then made toys in the 1970s, 60s and 70s, like you know, like a grabber hand and a love tester and things like that. Gunpei worked on some of those before he created the Game Boy. He later worked with Bandai on the Wonder Swan handheld. You may remember from Kelsey Lewin's interview that she talked brilliantly about trying to complete her collection of Bandai Wonder Swan games, and there was this very rare pregnancy tracker software that she paid an inordinate amount of money for on Yahoo Japan auctions. Anyway, that was for the Wonder Swan, which was created by Gunpei. I would have loved to have spoken to him. There are, of course, lots and lots of people who are living that I would love to get onto the podcast. Lots of people that, in fact, you guys have suggested and asked for already. Henry Cavill, the British actor who played Superman and plays The Witcher, absolutely would love to get him on here. He's a turbo nerd, I think. He's, you know, done a video or talks about how he goes about making his PC gamer rig, so it would be lovely to speak to Henry. Having spoken to Brian Lee O'Malley, the creator of Scott Pilgrim, I'd love to get the director Edgar Wright on here, who directed the film adaptation of Scott Pilgrim. That seems like it might be doable. I just need to pluck up the courage to ask Brian to put us in contact. So that could happen at some point. And relatedly, it would be great to get Michael Cera, who plays Scott Pilgrim in that film, on here. Of course, best known for perhaps being on Arrested Development. And well, no, actually best known for Barbie last year, I suppose. He plays video games, doesn't he? I mean, look at the guy. So it would be great to talk to him. I'd love to actually get Macaulay Culkin on, or Kieran Culkin. They both play lots of video games. I've seen loads of pictures of Macaulay Culkin playing on his Super Nintendo from back in the 90s. He'd be a good guest, but I somehow don't think he'd do it. Who else? Well, in terms of game makers, are we Kojima'd out? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it would be obviously an immensely wonderful thing to have Hideo Kojima, creator of Metal Gear Solid, Snatcher, and Police Snorts, and all the rest onto the podcast. I have interviewed him a few times and spent time with him, but yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe. Hidetaka Miyazaki, the creator of the Dark Souls series. All I can say about that is watch this space. Maybe. Could be happening at some point. Let's see. These things are hard to pull together, lots of moving parts. But again, that's someone who I've spoken to before. I've got a project in the works that I'm not ready to talk about, but I will talk about it at some point. But it's involving me interviewing quite a few of the formative Nintendo people. I'd love to have some of them on here. Of course, Miyamoto would be the ultimate get. I have interviewed Miyamoto for The New Yorker. You can go search that up. You just search up Miyamoto Park in New Yorker. That will come up. So that is one of the pieces of games, video game related journalism, of which I'm most proud, and you know, would I think reflect the kind of conversation I would hope to have with him on here. So I don't know if I would ever be able to get him on here. He doesn't do many things now, and the things he does do tend to be of that sort of prestigious lineage, which My Perfect Console doesn't quite have yet. But yeah, you never know. Maybe one day we can but dream. So yeah, and I've got a long, long wish list of other people I'd like to get on. Thank you for your question, Cormacur. Adam Hopton asks, are there any games that you've reviewed where you would now give them a more or less favourable write-up based on your experiences with them? Or are there games you really enjoy where the consensus of reviews was largely negative, or vice versa? Yeah, I mean, there's certainly reviews I wrote when I was in my 20s, of which I'm not proud now, and I think were unkind and juvenile, and that, you know, were just perhaps not reflective of the quality of the game in some way. I mean, I'm sure there was some truth in what I was saying, but, you know, I probably said it in obnoxious ways. The critic Martin Amos famously said that when young critics who enjoy being insulting they're experiencing a youthful corruption of power, which I think is very true. It's sort of the unearned power, and you can enjoy it a bit too much. And I think there are cases where I have done that. I'm not gonna specify what games, because I don't want you to Google and go and find those reviews because of shame. But yeah, no, I think probably, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, no, I probably stand by the things that I've written. You get a good sense. My friend Margaret Robertson, former editor of Edge magazine, said that, you know, pretty much with a video game, you know within 3 minutes whether it's good or not, and then the next 30 hours are really just shoring up that opinion, but it very rarely changes from those early reactions. And I think there's definitely truth in that. AA writes, we make memorable connections with video games, but we also sometimes connect with the console itself. I loved my Game Boy so much that it was almost as if it were a childhood friend. Ah, which console did you connect with the most? Which is the console that you most fondly remember? Well, yeah, good question. Thanks for your question, AA. I also remember getting a Game Boy, and yeah, I felt very fondly about it as well. It had that sort of Fisher-Price look to it, with the maroon buttons, and it just looks sort of vaguely cuddly, even though it's a piece of plastic. So yeah, I totally understand why you would have such deep affection for your Game Boy. For me, Sega Mega Drive was my first proper console, and so I have some affection for that. I still own that Mega Drive. I still have it plugged into my CRT that I am clinging on to. I will carry through life with me, I'm sure, and will probably outlive me, as long as the transistors don't leak or whatever. Also, the Sega Saturn. I've got such a soft spot for the Sega Saturn. Now, if you only have ever, you know, seen a Western, an American or a European Sega Saturn, you're probably thinking, "What are you talking about? That it had no good games." But the Japanese market, the Saturn market, is just full of loads of the kinds of games that I absolutely love. Loads of scrolling shoot 'em ups, Batsugan, Dodon Patch, all of that lot. I mean, the Saturn shoot 'em up library is, for people who know, is very, very well regarded, and those games are highly sought after and will set you back lots of money. And I love the Sega Saturn, absolutely love that console, because it's not for its 3D games, which it's very bad at, although there were a couple of good ones. Burning Rangers is pretty sweet. Panzer Dragoon Saga, famously, of course, is a very decent game, but they're quite ugly compared to the Sony PlayStation games at the time. However, its 2D games are second to none. It was really just very good at pulling those sprites around. Got fond feelings as well for the Neo Geo, which was really the Rolls Royce of consoles in the mid-90s. This was the system from SNK, which took really chunky cartridges, a bit like a novel or a big fat book, and it shared the inside the cartridge was the exact same PCB that the arcade version had. So it was really the first home console that had arcade perfect versions, which was a big thing in the 1990s. It's obviously not anymore. I didn't own one of those at the time. I got one of those after I was an adult and could afford one. But yeah, I absolutely loved the Neo Geo and its library, the Metal Slug games, of course, Blazing Star, a wonderful game, Polestar. Loads and loads of great titles for that. So I got a soft spot for that as well. I did actually write a piece for The New Yorker about Neo Geo collecting quite a few years ago. It's relatively short, but I think it's quite punchy and stands up. So if you're interested, search that up as well. Simon Harrowing writes, thank you for your podcast. I've been a satisfied Patreon supporter for several months. Thank you, Simon. Good point and moment to point out that we do have a Patreon, and it's getting better. I've figured out like how to give you nice things. So yeah, if you'd like to become a Patreon supporter, please do. It helps support the work of the podcast. Anyway, Simon, we're going back to Val McDermid. He says here, it's nice to be introduced to guests I'd never really known about, to be reminded of a dimly recalled game from my youth. A great recent example was Val McDermid and her highly entertaining recollections of the text adventure Bureaucracy. You mean Hitchhiker's Guide. Bureaucracy was chosen by Patrick House, as I said earlier. Incidentally, the Leather Goddesses of Phobos game she mentioned was yet another title authored by Steve Moretzky, whose work seems to crop up quite a lot on My Perfect Console. It would be really interesting to hear from him in a future episode. Well, I've got some good news for you, Simon. Lastly, a question for your letters. What games have you been surprised by their underrepresentation on the lists? Is there a game you would have on your own perfect console that hasn't been chosen by a guest? I get asked this question a lot, and lots of you email in and say, could you do an episode with your choices? I will do that at some point, I'm sure, but not yet. And I'm going to hold that back a bit. In fact, when a friend of the podcast, Glenn Moore, came on, he did ask me for one of my choices, and I did give him an answer, but I cut it out of the final edit before I put it out because I thought I'll hold that back. So I'm not going to reveal that right now, but in terms of games I've been surprised about their underrepresentation on the list, I mean, Mario doesn't come up too much. We've had Super Mario Kart a few times, and the first guest on the podcast, Josh Wardle, creator of Wordle the Phenomenon, I think he picked Super Mario Brothers, which was it Mario 3? One of the two, anyway. One of the classic Marios he picked. But I'm surprised it hadn't come up too much. Did Charles Cecil pick Super Mario 64? I think he probably did. But yeah, other than that, quite underrepresented, I'd say. Super Mario Galaxy is one of the finest games. That and its sequel, they really hold up. They are just masterful pieces of game design. I've also got a very, very soft spot for Yoshi's Island, which was the last of the sort of mainline Super Mario titles for the Super Nintendo. If you've not played that, go back and play it. I think you can get it on the Game Boy Advance as well. I'm not going to fact check all of the stuff. You just have to Google it. But yeah, you should play Yoshi's Island if you've not done so yet. There's lots of wonderful emulation devices that I'm sure you can play that on now, if not even just in your laptop browser right now where you're listening. So yeah, surprised they've not been on more. Metal Gear Solid, I think, has that been picked? That's been picked once by Ashley Birch. I don't think it's been picked another time. That's another game that I think is, you know, I would have expected to see more, probably. A highly influential game, and of course, you know, influential for lots of people growing up around the time that it came out as well. Bloodborne's come up a lot, so I can't really be surprised that some people pick more. But perhaps Elden Ring. Nobody's picked Elden Ring yet. Is it FromSoft's best game? No, Bloodborne is, obviously, but it's maybe a close second. Dark Souls, of course, I've got a very soft spot for. They're all good, aren't they? They're all good in their own ways. But yeah, Elden Ring hasn't come up yet, which is strange. Looking forward to the DLC for that later this year, by the way. Right, there are loads more questions, but what I'm going to do, where are we? We're at half an hour, so this is indulgent enough. Let me do one last one. Joe Fazzino asked, what are the origins of the podcast? I remember it just popped up one day, pretty much fully formed. How did you go from the initial idea to episode? Yeah, good question. So it was something I wanted to do for quite a few months before it came out. The first episode, I think, came out at the end of January 2023. I've been sort of pitching it around for about a year before that. I'd done some radio. I've mentioned him before. My friend Alex Barron, I know he listens to this. Hi, Alex. I'd done some work with him for the New Yorker Radio Hour, which is a radio show that Alex was a producer for. He now works for the New York Times, but at the time he was at the New Yorker working on that in conjunction with WNYC. And we worked on some stories for that, including a couple of video game stories, one of which led to my book that I wrote, A Game of Birds and Wolves. We did a story on EVE Online and a heist that happened. Anyway, I really enjoyed that and wanted to do something else. And I sort of took this idea for, you know, Desert Island Discs, for anyone who lives in the UK, is a, you know, extremely long-running national institution. I think they have a guest on who picks 7 pieces of music that mean something to them. And, you know, it's a tighter 30 minutes format. In fact, in the very early days, I learned recently, Desert Island Discs was entirely scripted. And so the guests that would come on would read from a script that had been pre-prepared. They don't do that anymore. Anyway, it's kind of an institution. It's a good format to get people to open up. So I wanted to do that for games. It has been done before, I think, a couple of times before, but I just wanted to put my spin on it. Pitched it to a few places, spoke to The Guardian about it, and spoke to the BBC. It did go some way at the BBC until a commissioner turned it down. And in fact, by that point, I'd sort of written a proposal and all of that kind of thing. And I thought, do I want to do it myself? I think maybe I do want to do it myself, which felt like a bit of a risk because I'm quite an established journalist in my own way, I suppose. And, you know, doing something new off your back, there's a risk of failure. That's frightening. Everyone knows that. So it took a little bit of time for me to work up the courage. And then I think it was just sort of over the Christmas holidays in 2022/2023. I was like, I'm going to do this. And I did actually, I don't think I've ever said this before, but I did a test episode with Martin Hollis, the creator of GoldenEye. And at that point, the format was quite different and it wasn't called My Perfect Console. I think it was called, a Video Game Ruined My Life. And the idea was that I was just going to talk to people in much the way I do about one game that they became completely obsessed with. And Martin was very kind to like try that out before it was proven, before it was going to come out. And thank you to him. And I would like to get him on the proper thing now it's fully developed. But anyway, didn't put that out and then started recording some and, you know, editing them and putting the music together and the structure. And yeah, it just sort of all came together. And I think those early episodes, I wasn't asking guests to name their console or anything like that, but that soon came into place and a few of the other sort of structural things. But I think to begin with as well, I was just sort of going straight into the biographical stuff and right from the get-go was asking people about where they grew up, etc. And then at some point I kind of learned actually the first section before the first game. It's quite fun just to ask a load of questions about whatever the big thing is that that person is known for or the thing that they're promoting or whatever it is, and then get into the biographical stuff a bit later. So that all settled over a period of months and here we are today. Right. That's quite enough for me. I think when people do like correspondence episodes on other podcasts, there's usually 2 of them, so there's a bit more back and forth. So I'm sorry you've had to listen to the monotony of my voice for half an hour, if indeed you did make it this far. I appreciate that. Maybe I'll do this again next month or in a couple of months. I don't know. Once I've got like a sufficient pile of letters and notes and things, and if people enjoy this. Do write and let me know. It's myperfectconsole@gmail.com. Write in if you've got any questions about, anything that you think I might be able to answer. I've been working as a journalist covering video games for 2 decades now, I guess, and as well as lots of other things. And I write sort of narrative nonfiction history books. So if you want to hear about any of that or about some of the interviews I've done outside of the podcast, then please feel free to ask away, and I'll put together maybe another one of these at some point. Do consider becoming a supporter. It makes a big difference. Go to patreon.com/myperfectconsole. You can become part of the community there, and you get various benefits, and it's just nice to, you know, you'll feel a bit more involved in the back and forth of all this stuff. If you've enjoyed this episode, that might be for you. All right, that's enough from me. Thank you for joining, for listening this far, and normal service will resume in a few days with the podcast proper. Until then, have a lovely week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.